North Korea's Kim says he's ready to meet U.S. President Donald Trump, but warns of a new path as he delivered his New Year's message. It appears that the North Korean leader is giving the U.S. one last chance. The U.S., however, has not given any signals that it is willing, for example, to ease or eliminate sanctions. In this edition of the debate, we will look at whether Trump's approach toward North Korea has failed or reaching near failure, and what that means for China, that region, and the world.
In his New Year's address to bring in 2019, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un reaffirmed Pyongyang's commitment to the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. Kim also praised the progress made in inter-Korean ties while warning against a return to military tension.
Now that North and South Korea decided on the path of peace and prosperity, we insist that joint military exercises with outside forces should no longer be allowed, and deployment of war weapons, such as outside strategic assets, should be completely stopped.
Following the summit between the North's Kim and U.S. President Donald Trump in early 2018, the two sides failed to close the gap over the steps Washington seeks toward Pyongyang's denuclearization and North Korea's demands for incentives, including U.S. and U.N. sanctions relief. North Korea froze its long-range missile program and nuclear testing throughout 2018 and said it may alter its strategy if Washington does not follow through on the summit agreement.
If the U.S. miscalculates our people's patience, forces something upon us and pursues sanctions and pressure without keeping a promise it made in front of the whole world, we have no option but to explore a new path in order to protect our sovereignty and achieve peace on the Korean Peninsula.
Analysts believe the U.S. must offer Pyongyang something to move the process forward.
President Trump should make some concession to North Korea, exactly as in proportion to what Pyongyang has done. Make some actual moves. There can be some skeptics in North Korea too about the whole process. Trump once said he fell in love with Kim Jong-un. He should show his love.
Both North Korea-U.S. and North Korea-South Korea summits had been reported to be possible for December of last year, only to be stalled in back-channel discussions. In 2018, there were three inter-Korean summits, as well as the landmark meeting between the North's Kim and U.S. President Trump on June 12th. But in the latter part of last year, that early optimism failed to bring about any tangible results. Still, there have been signals that North Korean summit diplomacy could resume in 2019. Frank Smith, Press TV, Seoul.
Our guest joining us for this edition of the debate, columnist of The Hill, Brent Podolsky, joins us from Washington, D.C. And from the Answer Coalition, we have Richard Becker, who joins us from San Francisco. Gentlemen, welcome, Brent Podolsky. Let me start with you and get a reaction from what the North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un, has said. Quote, if the U.S. fails to carry out its promise to the world and remains unchanged in its sanctions and pressure upon the DPRK, we might be compelled to explore a new path.
Well, I don't know what that means. I'm not sure Kim Jong-un knows what that means either. I think obviously both sides will have to make concessions. Both sides' concessions will be in stages. I happen to believe, and I'm not a big supporter generally of President Trump, I'm a Democrat, but I do think he wants sincerely an agreement with Korea to avoid a war. I'm not convinced that Kim Jong-un wants an agreement to avoid a war. I think he may want the nuclear. That's what I worry about. But I think what they have to do is to have pre-meetings privately, which is happening right now. They have to prepare these discussions. If they succeed, and I hope they do, there'll be a major summit sometime, probably in the first several months of this new year. I think it would be useful if both sides would begin by offering to make concessions quickly, partially, and then they go beyond that, and each side will make additional concessions on. So I think there is some hope that something can happen, but I also don't think that North Korea has been honorable. I don't think they've kept their word after the negotiations that happened last year. And I don't think anybody is benefiting if we go back to a state of military danger or hostility. So I hope they both act in a responsible way. I do think that President Trump, whatever one may think, does want an agreement diplomatic, does not want war. I hope North Korea takes advantage of that. I hope the concessions from both sides That's how diplomacy works. We'll come in stages, simultaneous. And we'll find out in the next 2 months, I think, what the future will bring.
What do you think, Richard Becker? Do you think that North Korea has done enough and has the U.S. reciprocated?
Well, I don't see any evidence at all of what your other guest is saying, that North Korea has not adhered to the agreements. They have adhered to the agreements. And what they're talking about is ending that cooperation because they're not getting anything back. There's no relief of the sanctions. There's very harsh sanctions that have been imposed at the behest of the United States. I think it's really important to remember that Trump, number one, that Trump can say one thing one day and then, you know, the next day or the next week or the next month have a completely different position. And we should recall, number two, that his national security advisor now, John Bolton, is a rabid warmonger who, when asked in the year 2000 what he thought the U.S. policy should be in regard to North Korea, he said, no North Korea. He's now the person who is apparently the closest when it comes to foreign policy to Trump. And so I think that we see it's a very complicated situation right now, or a complex situation, in regard to not only to North Korea and the United States, but also to South Korea and the United States, and South Korea to North Korea. And you can see that the Trump administration is making inordinate demands on South Korea to pay 50% more, or twice as much as the $830 million that South Korea now pays to support the presence of U.S. troops in South Korea, and just paid 90% over 10 years of a $10.8 billion building of a new central U.S. base in South Korea. So I think there's a very, very strong sense in South Korea that they're being taken advantage of by the United States. They're being extorted by Trump. And at the same time, they are calling for the United States to end the state of war that has existed since 1950 between the United States and North Korea. They're calling for that very strongly. So we have a very complex situation here, but one where the prospects for a real agreement can disintegrate, I think, quite quickly unless the United States makes some concessions to North Korea.
Okay, when you talk about South Korea, Richard Becker, there, let me ask Brent Podolsky. Richard Becker, do you get a sense that South Korea could handle this better than the U.S. in terms of establishing channels, which it has, establishing some economic relationships with the North, which it has, and perhaps leaving this up to South Korea and standing on the side to see how this pans out? Or is that just the wrong approach? Because some get the feeling that South Korea so far has achieved more than the U.S. has in terms of getting closer to North Korea.
Well, South Korea,
well, I think,
and
that
the United States.
This is for Brent Podolsky.
I'll
come back to you, Richard Becker. I'm sorry, Brent Podolsky, go ahead.
Yeah, South Korea and the United States are allies. It's not true, the propaganda for North Korea that I just heard from San Francisco, that they have hostile attitudes towards the U.S. and South Korea. That just isn't true. They work in reality behind the scenes all the time, and there is coordination between South Korea and the United States all the time behind the scenes, and they are generally working together. Now, South Korea, President Moon, is leading the charge. It's his country right on the border of North Korea, and that's the way it should be, with cooperation and support from the United States. And by the way, when it's said that the United States has not made any concessions, that is obviously false. One thing that the United States did do, which was important at the beginning of the process, was to suspend military activities, exercises between the United States and South Korea. That was a significant concession by the United States. It was constructive, it was positive, and nothing done of equal magnitude from North Korea. What they now are apparently doing is still trying to do development of missile technology, sneaking it through, and that's not good. So what has to happen is both sides have to do what's right for all of them. I say all sides. That includes the United States, that includes South Korea, that includes North Korea, that includes China, which is an important player in North Korea. And I hope that they can make some preliminary action privately and then go public with a summit and make concessions that both sides do. Nobody benefits from dangers or threats about war. Everybody loses. Mm-hmm. And it's in everybody's interest to try to prevent that. And I hope that's what happens. But it simply is not true, as Mr. Becker said, that the United States has not made concessions. It was a significant move to suspend the military exercises with South Korea. North Korea has done absolutely nothing of equal magnitude to respond, and they should.
Richard Becker.
Well, they have suspended the nuclear tests. They've suspended the missile tests. That was the big demand. And, you know, you should hear what Trump said about the military maneuvers. He said these war games are so expensive, that's why we shouldn't be funding them. At midnight last night, the agreement, a five-year agreement between South Korea and the United States over how much South Korea pays for U.S. military stationing, the 28,000 U.S. troops that are in South Korea, it was terminated. There's no agreement right now. And Trump is demanding that they pay not $830 million a year, but more than $1.3 billion to pay for their own country to be occupied by U.S. troops. And at the same time, I think that there's not an understanding here of the strength of sentiment inside both North and South Korea for a reunification of a country that was artificially divided. There's the 38th parallel is a completely arbitrary line that was drawn at the end of World War II. And the occupation of South Korea continues to be a matter of great resentment on the part of the South Koreans and North Koreans as well. Because in the war, the Korean War of 1950 to 53, the U.S. basically leveled North Korea. Mm-hmm. The pilots in a year into that war were saying, we have no more targets. What are we supposed to bomb? More than 4 million Koreans were killed, and most of them were killed by bombing. Many were killed in the fighting as well. So I think we have to see that that's a reality that is not understood by people in the United States very well.
Okay, why is the U.S. occupying South Korea, Brent Podolsky?
Well, what you just heard in the North Korean propaganda on this show coming from San Francisco was lies. I'm sorry. It's not an occupation.
It's just reality.
The United States
it's just
defending,
reality, Brent. It's reality.
The United States, let me finish. When you're in North Korea, you could do TV like that, but I'm going to get my turn here. That when the United States is in South Korea to defend South Korea from a northern attack, that is how the South Koreans view it. So what my North Korean propagandist in San Francisco just said was untrue. They don't view it as occupation. It is not an occupation. That's just a lie. I mean, Kim Jong-un couldn't have said it better on a lie. But what they are doing is protecting the security of South Korea from a North Korean attack. And clearly, this could be better handled by Trump in terms of the conditions and the terms that they do. But it's not true what he says about what the South Koreans think of the United States. That's just totally false and totally wrong. Kim Jong-un may say that. You might find someone in San Francisco that'll repeat it. It's not true.
Okay, let's talk about
There you hear the propaganda from Washington.
Well, let's talk about something I think both both of you may expand on it, because it seems like North Korea nor the U.S. are not in agreement with. And I'll start with you, Richard Becker. It's the idea of denuclearization. We don't know exactly. I'm not too sure what was signed in that Singapore summit or what was said that would point to denuclearization and, of course, what it would entail. Perhaps you can tell us what Trump thinks it should be and what North Korea thinks it should be, and which side hasn't done or lived up to its obligations.
Well, it's very hard to know the real mind of Donald Trump, and I think he's proven that over and over again by his ever-shifting positions on so many different issues, most recently about the shutdown of the U.S. government, and we don't have to go back very far. So we don't really know what Trump's thinking now as compared to what Trump was thinking in Singapore. But I think that the idea was the path to denuclearization would be one that would also entail not just the end to North Korea or the suspension of the further development of North Korea's nuclear program, but also assurances from the United States that it would not have nuclear weapons aboard Trident submarines, for example, which can independently target over 200 different centers of human population with nuclear weapons, that would not remain. North Korea developed its nuclear program as a defensive program. There is no question about that. I don't think there's any serious analyst who thinks otherwise. The idea that they would develop nuclear weapons to launch a few and then be completely obliterated, which they know very well is what would happen, that's just a foolish idea. They did this, you know, we should remember George W. Bush in his State of the Union message in 2002 called Iran, Iraq, and North Korea the axis of evil, a really ridiculous formulation, but that's what he said, and then went on a year later to destroy Iraq. That sent a message, I think, to other countries in the world that, you know, no matter what you did, if you didn't have a means to defend yourself, if you didn't have a real deterrent, you would be subject to the same fate that Iraq suffered and Libya suffered later, countries that have been basically destroyed by the United States because they could do it without any threat to themselves. The U.S. leaders, the military and political leaders felt and believed and knew that there was no threat to themselves. Mm-hmm. I think that really explains the North Korean nuclear program.
Well, Richard Becker, look, we have this North Korean leader in the New Year message saying that, you know, we may explore a new path for defending the sovereignty of our country and the interests of our state. If you want to take a look at the reasons, it's basically because they haven't seen relief from the U.S. when it comes to sanctions. I mean, if you were in North Korea and you were to take a look at the U.S. actions, not only in terms of sanctions, but, for example, how it did not live up to the nuclear deal with Iran, why then would you continue having talks with the U.S.?
Well, it's not just the nuclear
deal with
Iran.
No, this is for Brent Podolsky. I'm sorry. Brent Podolsky, go ahead. My apologies. Brent Podolsky, go ahead.
You called me, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Brent Podolsky.
Oh, look, I think that North Korea and the United States and South Korea can work out a way where the concessions are mutual. For example, North Korea can agree to pull back from some of its conventional weapons on the border and to allow independent inspectors of nuclear a development that they're taking inside North Korea. In return, North Korea can ask the United States, and under those circumstances, we should agree to begin lifting the sanctions in stages while North Korea allows inspections of its nuclear weapons in stages. That's what I mean when I say both sides can do concessions at the same time, step by step. And for everything that the United States asks North Korea to do, which North Korea should do, North Korea should ask the United States to reciprocate. And at the top of the list would be phasing down the sanctions step by step as North Korea makes its concessions step by step. That's what diplomacy is, and that's how war can be prevented.
Okay, one thing we haven't talked about since we're quickly running out of time is the China factor. Richard Becker, what about China? What is its relationship currently with North Korea? And is it a factor when it comes to these talks?
Well, I think there, too, it's contradictory in that there's reports today that President Xi Jinping of China is planning to visit North Korea. I don't think that's been fully confirmed yet. And I think that China is very unhappy with the fact that the U.S. policy continues to be what it is, and the no relief and sanctions. And we should remember that China is the one, because 90% of North Korea's trade goes through China. China is the country that's actually mainly enforcing the sanctions. And I think that there's growing unhappiness in the Chinese leadership with the fact that the U.S. hasn't really moved to do anything to relieve the sanctions, which sanctions, we should know, are really an act of war against a country. And you can see what the sanctions did to Iraq, more than 1.2 million people killed by the sanctions, the absence of adequate food, medicine, and other essential supplies. So I think that it may be when there's a discussion of a different policy from North Korea that may coincide with growing unhappiness in China and the Chinese leadership over the Trump administration and what it's doing and not doing in regard to moving the process forward.
Well, I mean, Brent Podolsky, if it comes down to sanctions, at one point Trump said that he and Kim Jong-un fell in love. He wrote him letters. And one analyst said, why doesn't Trump just show back the love and relief, give him some sanctions relief?
Well, I'm not sure I would compare the relationship to Romeo and Juliet right now. That's not a very good idea. And I would not have chosen those words. On China, though, I'll make an important point. China, we don't know what China's doing, really. I don't, you don't, San Francisco doesn't, because that's very close. They can play in China a constructive role. And the thing to remember about China does not want Korea to develop and obtain nuclear weapons. That does not help China, because those who have nuclear weapons can change the direction that they are aimed in. And so from China's point of view, I think their objective interest is to help reach an agreement. I hope that's what they do. I believe that would serve their interests. I cannot tell you any more than anyone else can what they're saying privately and secretly, but that is a sign of what is possible, because China does not want nuclear weapons in North Korea aimed in any direction. That does not help China. China has enough domestic economic problems to worry about that they would probably be benefited, as would everyone else, by a long agreement between the United States, South Korea, and North Korea.
Okay. And Richard Brecker, in conclusion, many have said that this rapprochement or talks between the United States and North Korea, well, they're going to fail. And that essentially would mean, of course, the U.S. will end up where it began. Do you think that's going to happen? And if so, what is next?
Well, I hope that they don't fail, because I think that then we will confront the danger of a big war and possibly a nuclear war. But I think that we have to really look at what the role of Bolton is at this point as the National Security Advisor, who has an extremely hostile, I would even say genocidal, attitude toward North Korea. So I think that's the situation we're in, and I think that people have to really make it clear from all different walks of life in the United States and other countries that we want to see a real peace process, an end to the Korean War after all these years, and peace and for reunification, which the people of South and North Korea very much desire.
All right, we're going to leave it there. Thank you very much. Columnist at The Hill, Brent Podolsky, spoke to us from Washington, D.C., and from the Answer Coalition, Richard Brecker, spoke to us from San Francisco. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Vitapoy, the entire team in the capital, Tehran, is goodbye.